I want to take a look at an intriguing Ramban, a machlokas that he has with the Ramban that you didn't see coming. In the opening parsha of Kisisa, which is, of course, Machzah Shekel. Machatzis HaShekel B'Shekel HaKodesh. Kodesh Baruch tells Moshe Rabbeinu to instruct the Jewish people that each can be giving half a shekel, the shekel hakodesh, of the holy shkolim. We haven't really heard much about shkolim so far in Kodesh. We heard about silver coins whenever Avraham Avinu was buying Maris HaMachpelah. We heard about kesita, mea kesita, when Yaakov was buying real estate. What's the language in by Avraham Avinu? Barrios, shekel kesa. And the word shekel does appear. Silver shekel. But this shekel hakodesh, that's something new. Kabbalah Moshe Rabbeinu matbeya kesef di Yisrael ki melech gadol haya. Moshe Rabbeinu established a monetary system for Klal Yisrael because he was a great king. He was a leader. Rav Shavel on the bottom points you to by the pasuk in Vezos Habracha by Hebi Shur and Melech, which many understand is a reference to Moshe Rabbeinu. So Moshe Rabbeinu is acting as a king in many senses. So he established a monetary system. You don't have to have a PhD in poli-sci to know that maintaining a monetary system is one of the fundamental functions of government. There's been a lot of discussion lately about what are and are not appropriate functions of government at different levels, but certainly maintaining a monetary system is definitely one of the fundamental roles of a national government. The Moshe Rabbeinu is Koveya, sets up the shekel system. Now, again, Avraham Avinu is also paying with the shekel, so it can't be that Rabban just says this is a new shekel system unrelated to the previous one. The Karl Matveyahu Shekel. He called the coinage that he had established Shekel. In other words, he may be, just like there are Canadian dollars and American dollars, they're not the same thing, but that term gets used for multiple monetary systems. The Moshe Rabbeinu uses the term Shekel. Mavur, what is the word Shekel? What's the Shoresh of Shekel? Mishkal is weight. Mavur Shekola Ahab Matveya bin Mishkal Shalem Ein Bo Peches Velo Kesef Sigin. You're going to give half a weight. The coins are called weights. Perhaps, maybe, I don't know about the etymology, maybe similar to the fact that the British pound, the pound is a unit of weight, it's also a unit of money. I'm not sure if that's also etymologically connected. But Rabban points out, the word, the name of the coin, shekel, is related to the term for weight. The idea being, it's a complete weight. That's the way the coinage was silver. And the idea was that every coin was the same mass of silver. Number one, Ein Bo Pchas, it's not missing any. It's not going to be a lesser weight, nor Kesef Sigin. And there are two ways that a coin could be missing silver. Either it's too small, too light, or it has the right weight, but there's an admixture of other baser metals. You take silver, you add a little bit of iron, and all of a sudden you have your full weight, but it's not a full weight of silver. The Rabban says, that's why it's called a shekel. You have your full weight of silver. No pchas, no kesef sigin. But then Rabban says, read the language carefully. Where the Rabban see this, by the way, what we saw so far, how do you see that Moshe was masak in this? This is like we're watching the establishment of a new monetary system. Fascinating idea. The second tzaddik in Tanakh to be responsible for establishing a monetary system. The Chazal understands when Yaakovina comes back to Eretz Yisrael from Beis Lavan, one of the first places he in Eretz Yisrael that he camps is at the city of Shem, in or at the city of Shem. Yichan es Pnei Ha'ir. Funny terminology. Yichan es Pnei Ha'ir. He was Chan, the face of the city. What does that mean? The naming, Vayichan, could mean Lulashim Machana, that he encamped. But he encamped Pnei Ha'ir, so that might mean that he encamped outside of the city. There's discussion al derech pshat, al derech drash. Well, why is he not moving into Shem? Why is he camping outside of Shem? Could be a variety of reasons. And then Chazal, an additional levels of interpretation al derech drash, because again, the language is an awkward way to say that he lived there, he set up shop there. We've heard other terminologies earlier. Vayitas ahala, vayet ahala. What's this? Vayichan, it's penei ha'ir, that combination. The Chazal understand it may also be not only lashon chanoya or machana in camp, or nowadays to park the car, but it's also lashon chayim, that he added chayim to the face of the city. he did something. He came to town. He wasn't just going to live there and not contribute to society. Yaakov shows up and he contributes to enhancing the economy or the culture of Shem. How? So Chazal has several suggestions, one of which is maybe he developed their monetary system. Interesting. Yaakov Avinu is seen as having developed the monetary system, and then again Moshe Rabbeinu, how do you see it? The Kurd said, Machtis HaShekel. What's the B'Shekel HaKodesh? What's with the B'Shekel HaKodesh? The truth is, we've heard of Shkalim in Parshas Mishpatim. Shkalim already appeared in Parshas Mishpatim, I believe. That's some of the Knessos. Shloshim Shekel. So what's the B'Shekel HaKodesh? It's half a shekel in this shekel. So it sounds like this is something new. And specifically because it's B'Shekel HaKodesh, the holy shekel. The Moshe Rabbeinu is establishing a new monetary system, borrowing a term that already exists in the past, because as part of the name is shekel. That has to do with the fact that it's an honest weight, but it's a holy shekel. What's holy about the coin? What could be holy about money? Shekel HaKodesh, holy money. What is holy money? U'ba'avur shemishkeleho arachinu fidyon ha'bechor v'madbeya ha'hu shehen kodesh. Since there are several holy payments that are measured in the shkalim, erchin, arachin, the Torah says if a Jew can make a donation, or make a pledge to donate money to Beis Hamikdash, to Hekdash, there are different ways you could specify how much you're planning to give. So one of the ways is you say, I want to give the erech, the number that corresponds to the gender and age of that person. Later in Chumash, you have a whole table of male, female, this age bracket, that age bracket. What does it correspond to? Oh, you said 30 shekel, 50 shekel, 5 shekel, different numbers. All of those are halachos of giving to Hekdesh that are measured in this shekel. Or, pinyin haben, 5 shekel of these shekels measured in the shekel. But since we're measuring holy things, the units of measurement for these holy payments are this type of shekel, that makes the unit of measurement itself a holy unit. That's why it's called kodesh. Plus, he says, "V'chenko shikli ha-mishkan, v'chen kol ketzef katsu ha-omer ba-Torah." Every time the Torah specifies the amount of money, yikra lo katsu shekel ha-kodesh. You hear this again and again and again. Then at the bottom, he quotes Rabbeinu Abachaye as saying, not only that the Torah uses this terminology whenever we talk about shekalim, but that's part of why it's called Shekel HaKodesh. In other words, it's not only that we give things to the Kohen, we give things to Hekdesh, and that's holy. The fact that this is how you pay Shloshim Shekel Shel Eved, the fact that when you have a chiyuv to pay, to try to make reparation for a crime, but the din requires that you pay money, so that itself, that's kodesh. Mitzvahs are done, mitzvahs are measured with the ishkam. The chayin, and then he says, this is not the only time you find something called blank hakodesh. Shekel hakodesh. Where do we find the language of chazal, that same type of phrase? Lashon hakodesh. The chayin hatam etzli masher rabbi huseinu korin lashon haTorah, lashon hakodesh. The Tanakh never calls Hebrew Lashon HaKodesh, but he says, Rabbi Hosein, the Chazal do. Tells you in the bottom where to look, in Masechet Sota. It's not the only term that Chazal used for Hebrew. You'll find the Mishnah is the word Ashuri. You'll find the Mishnah is perhaps the word Ivri. You'll find in the Tanakh, the Sefer Melachim, they talk about Ivris. Ivrit. That is a biblical word. If anyone tells you that Ivrit is has nothing to do with Lashon HaKodesh and Ivrit is just modern Hebrew, you can tell them to take a look at the Sefer Melachim. In the story of Chizkiyahu and Rav Shaked, the Torah refers to, the Tanakh refers to the Hebrew language the tzaddikim were speaking as Ivris or Ivrit. But Chazal referred to it at times as Lashon HaKodesh. So what does that mean? What does that mean? Why is that? Repetition says the same idea. Repetition, divrei Torah v'hanavuos v'chol divrei kedusha kulam v'alashon ha'o namru. All of Tanakh was written in Hebrew. Not Tanakh was written in Hebrew, but the Tanakh records Hebrew being used in different events. Hu alashon shakadosh baruch hu yisaleh shemo medaber bo im nevi'avim adasav. This is the language of Nevuah. Ribbono Shel Olam transmits a Nevuah to people. What language is it in? In Hebrew. Anochi lo yielacha shar dibros hatorah v'nevuah. Most famously, Aseret HaDibros, but other nevuahs as well. So that's the number one. The Tanakh is written in Hebrew. Number two, Hebrew is the language of nevuah. Number three, ubo nikra b'shmosav hakadoshim. The names of HaKadosh Baruch Hu are Hebrew names. Kel Elokim Tzvako Shaka Yudkei Vavkei. Hashem HaGadol HaMiyuchad. I'm not sure if he means to refer to Yudkei Vavkei or to some different name. Uba Bara Olamo. So it's a language of Tanakh, it's a language of Nevuah, it's a language of Shmos Hashem. And number four, it's a language of Brios HaOlam. The language of Brios HaOlam. Shavel on the bottom, it sends you to a line in the Bereishis Rabbah that says that. That Hebrew was a language, biblical Hebrew was a language of Brios HaOlam. And as you see in the first paragraph of Bereishis, the Karashmos Shamayim V'Arz V'Chol HaShabam. Not only is HaKadosh Baruch Hu using the Hebrew language, so to speak, as the tool to create the world, but he then uses it to refer to and describe what he just created. Malacha V'Chol Tzva V'Chulam B'Shem Yikra Michal V'Gavriel B'Lashon Ahu. The names of Malachim are Hebrew names. V'Akar Hashemus L'Kdoshim Hashem Ba'aretz. There are people who are named by Ribbono Shel Olam. Who gets named by HaKadosh Baruch Hu B'Nevuah? Avram, Yitzhak, Yaakov, Shlomo, Mezula, Sab. Right? For instance, they told B'Nevuah that he should be called, that you're going to have a child, he's going to call Yitzhak. Avram was not originally named by B'Nevuah, but he's renamed B'Nevuah. Yaakov Avinu is renamed by the Malach. And all this, Shlomo, David HaMelech gets a Nevuah in advance of the birth of Shlomo HaMelech. His name should be Yedidya, so on and so forth. Shlomo had multiple names. So, and these names are all being given in Hebrew. Yedidya is not a Portuguese name. Yedidya is not a Ugaritic name. Those are Hebrew names. So that's what Ramban says. It's kadosh because of what it's used for. Something that's chosen to be used in a holy context, that tells you that it itself is holy. That either makes it holy, either it's a siba, that's what infuses it with kedusha, or he's trying to say it's a simen, that the fact it was used in so many holy contexts, it must be that it's holy. Ramban is not clear about what the direction of causality is, but certainly there's a correlation between functioning in holy contexts, functioning toward accomplishing holy purposes, and being holy. Shekel HaKodesh, Lashon HaKodesh. He quotes the Rambam, who has a different approach, and the Ramban is very unhappy with it. Harav Omer Mor HaNevuchim. Harav means the Rambam, writes in the Morim, tells you on the bottom where to look, at the beginning of the third Chalik. If you want to look it up inside. If I remember correctly, the beginning of the third Chalik, there are a number of talking about language issues, grammar issues, and terminology in Hebrew. Harav Amar B'Mor HaNevuchim. Rambam says, Al Tachshav Shel Nikra L'Shoneinu L'Shon HaKodesh L'Ga'avaseinu O L'Ta'useinu. It had nothing to do with us. It's not because we get to use it. No. Rambam says, B'Din Kizos HaLashon Kedosha Lo yimatzu uvo shemos le'ever habi'ila bezachar o b'nekeva. Rama writes, it's because there's no term in biblical Hebrew for reproductive organs. So that makes it v'lo l'tipa u'l'shasen u'l'tzoa rak b'kino. There are no direct terms. There are no frank, forthright terms in biblical Hebrew for feces, for urine. It's all bikinoi, and that's what makes it holy. That's the Rambam argues. Va'al yata os ha-shegel, and don't get confused by the word shegel, which we come across typically in Chumash, certainly, in Kriyot Ksiv. It's a Ksiv that isn't read. Yehu shem isha ha-mizumenas le-mishkan. Shegel sounds like it's the term that means sexual intimacy. The Rambam says, once in a while you'll have Yishkalena is Ksiv, and the Kri is a euphemism, Yishkaven. Most of the time, 99 times out of 100, the Torah uses a euphemism. We'll talk about Giloy Erva, I'll talk about Shechiva, which obviously are both euphemisms for an actual act of Bia. Bia itself is yet another euphemism. He says, but every once in a while you'll see that word Shagel. That sounds like it's actually the direct term for Tashmish. Tashmish is yet another euphemism. Kihu Shein Isha Hamuzumenos the Mishnah says, nah, that's a specific word. That means a pilegesh. That means a pilegesh. A pilegesh or a prostitute, something like that. Amar Yishkalena apimashe nichtav alav. Perusha yikach isha lefilegesh. The word Yishkalena appears, believe it's in the Tovacha, it doesn't, it's not a neutral word just to mean intimacy, it means specifically to take a woman as a concubine, as a zona. That's the Rambam's take. Ramban does not like it in a big way. There are many kashrus on the Rambam. He lists a few. Ain't Sarah Tamaza. Says you don't need the Rambam's reason. I gave a reason. Hadavar Baruch, Shaloshin, Kodesh Kadashimu, Kamosha Kriyashti. In other words, the Ramban is arguing that the language itself is Kadosh. And therein lies a very, very fundamental argument. Not the only fundamental argument here. Ramban says the language is Kadosh. Then what the Ramban is sensing is that the Rambam is trying to avoid describing any actual Kedushas language. That's not actually Kadosh, it's just it's a euphemistic language. It's missing those words that would lower it. But it's not the language that's actually Kaddish. Rabbi said, no, the language itself is Kaddish. Shelat, it is Hakuzri of Rambam points out, that is definitely a running machlokas between the Rambam and the Kuzri, and the Rambam seems to be aligned with the Kuzri, at least to an extent in this. In terms of to what extent do you actually see Kedusha invested in different items? Do you see Eretz Yisrael as having inherent Kedusha? It's a Kuzri. Definitely, the Yehuda Levi in the Kuzri talks extensively about that. Would you see Eretz Yisrael as being Kadosh? Eretz Yisrael's Kadosh means it facilitates Klal Yisrael coming together, facilitates having a Beis HaMikdash, facilitates, but not that it actually is inherently Kadosh. So Ramban here says, no, the language is Kadosh. It's used for different Kedusha. Rabbi Hashem created the universe with it. Kadosh Baruch Hu communicated Nebuah with people through it. Kadosh Baruch Hu authored Torah in this language. It is Kadosh. Again, whether that's a simon of a pre-existing inherent Kedusha or that's what endowed with the Kedusha, but at the end of the day, Ramban says the language is Kadosh. Unlike the Rambam. He doesn't like the fact that the Rambam is uncomfortable saying the language itself is Kadosh. And then he says he also doesn't like the Rambam's Parshanot. He says he doesn't think that's a correct translation of the word Yishkalena. He says Chazal do use euphemisms, and the Tanakh uses euphemisms. Ki malach ha-mashahu ochel, but that's not what's going on here. So the Ramban again. Ramban number one is upset. Ramban feels that there's actually is kedusha infused into the language. Again, much as Ramban and the Yehuda Levi see Kedusha infused into the land, that is so. Ramban is unhappy with the Rambam's parshanut and translational word Yishkalenu. The truth is, and then the Ramban sort of moves on. He says, no, he doesn't think the Rambam is correct. There are more kashas he could have asked the Rambam. Another kasha he could have asked the Rambam is, what has the Rambam gained by narrowing the meaning of Yishkalenu? Narrowing the meaning of Yishkalenu to specifically a more debased type of intimacy. Now all of a sudden, the presence of that word in the Hebrew language doesn't take away from its Kedusha? It's hard to understand. Which brings us sort of to the larger issue. Which is that the Rambam stands apart from the Rov Rishonim in seeing sort of a, what's the best way to put it? Seeing something to be embarrassed of in intimacy. That thread sort of comes and goes sometimes in the writings of the Rambam. That's definitely something you do not see in the Ramban and most other Rishonim. That's sort of the larger kashya here is, why would that make it less kadosh? If anything, other Rambam. The same argument that the Ramban makes, that the language is kadosh because it's a vehicle for kadosh accomplishments. The same can be said of intimacy as well. It could be a vehicle for terrible chiyuvei karis. It could also be a vehicle for kedusha on so many levels. So the Ramban is fundamentally sort of, it's very meta, this Ramban. It's a very svara that he has about Lashon HaKodesh, which is part of not only what Rambam disagrees with, but that same type of machlokas, where do you see kedusha and how you define kedusha and how inherent can kedusha be, is repeating itself multiple times right here. And that all brings us back to circle back to where we started. Rabban is saying the Chazal use the terminology Lashon HaKodesh, and for the Ramban that means that it's a holy language, not just that it lacks certain embarrassing terms. Rabban wouldn't find those terms embarrassing, nor does he think that's why it's Lashon HaKodesh. Lashon HaKodesh actually has Kedusha, and that's, but the Ramban is drawing an equation or parallel to that and Shekel HaKodesh. So I would suggest the same type of thinking there too. In other words, holy money. Some people might be uncomfortable. The truth, I think psychologists who study parenting say that they often find that the birds and the bees is not the topic that parents are most uncomfortable talking to their kids about. The topic parents are typically most uncomfortable talking to their kids about is money. Teaching your kids about money is for many, many parents even harder than teaching your kids about intimacy. It's a surprising thing, but apparently that is the case. People have a hard time talking to their kids about money for a variety of reasons. Sometimes it's because parents don't have enough money, or either not as much as they would like, or even objectively insufficient money. So that's hard, and that's been a stress at home, so it's hard to talk about it. But that's not necessarily, sometimes there can be plenty of money, but parents are very uncomfortable talking to kids about money. Not all parents, but plenty of parents are actually very uncomfortable talking to kids about money. It's probably rooted in the same he'ara. In other words, we see these things as, we sometimes see intimacy as something which is fundamentally anti-kadosh, which is not true. We sometimes see money. We sometimes have like an awkward relationship with money too. You want to have money, but at the same time it feels somehow dirty. Which, there is such a thing as dirty money. As in, money acquired through inappropriate means is terrible. Today there are plenty of mitzvahs in the Torah that govern how you should and should not earn money, how you should and should not dispose of your money. I'm actually looking forward to the chevra I've been learning in the afternoon with learning mezuzah. We're wrapping up mezuzah this week with a chazar, and then we're going to spend the rest of the year with another on hilchos tzedakah, which are among the most important shaylos that no one asks. Is how do you figure out how much tzedakah to give, and how do you figure out how to spend your tzedakah funds? How you prioritize, what are appropriate causes, and how do you prioritize, how do you allocate, how do you diversify your tzedakah giving among different, how should asset allocation look? Now, Allah has plenty to say about this, but a lot of times people have this awkward relationship with money. It's like a fascinating sort of the larger perspective Rabban is giving us, is Shekel HaKodesh. Money could be holy. It's always holy, but money used for holy purposes is holy. Language used for holy purposes is holy. Physicality used for holy purposes is holy. I'll leave you with an excellent mashal. I believe I heard originally from Rabbi Willig, Mordechai Willig, Shalita. Did I ever tell you about the Nesivus and the boat, the mural on the boat? No. Oh, wow. Okay, it's very important. This is very important. It's talking very important. So Nesivus writes like this. It's in his Hakadama to his Perush on Shir HaShir. To think about why it's there. He tells the following story. So imagine the following scenario. You have an emperor, you have an empire that stretches, ranges over thousands of miles. Right? Think British Empire back in the day. They went at the height of the British Empire. They said the sun never sets in the British Empire, and they had territories all over the world. The emperor builds. They invest millions, hundreds of millions, in a new imperial palace. It is glorious. The construction is completed. They probably did not have a lot of zoning issues. And the construction is completed, and it's stunning. And it's getting to hark back to a time when people took pride in their monarch. Like, it was a source of national pride, like the new glorious imperial palace. But not, so for that country, people got to see it. But the emperor wants his subjects throughout the world to be able to shat nachas from the new imperial palace. But there's no way to bring them all to the capital city. So he commissions world-class muralists to paint like a 100-foot mural of the palace. Arguably looks even more gorgeous than the palace itself. Stunning. And then put it on a boat. The captain is given a list of ports of call to make. And he's going to make stops at different territories throughout the world, different territories of this empire, so people, and everyone knows the schedule in advance, that people will come when it's your turn, when it's your city, is hosting the boat with the mural of the imperial palace. People are thronging by the thousands to come and ooh and ah, shep nachas. And he's going from stop to stop. Yom, there's one stop that he makes. They're docked overnight in the harbor. In the middle of the night, vandals come and attack the mural. And they graffiti on it, and they scribble on it, and they throw mud at it, and they tear it. The morning comes, and it's now a picture of a dark, dingy, ugly-looking building. But the captain has instructions. He has a list of stops to make. So they raise anchor and off to the next stop. So Nesiva says, imagine for a moment that you live at one of those later stops, one of those post-vandalism ports. So you're going to come and see the mural of the palace. And the palace looks ugly, dirty, disgusting, very unattractive, very unappealing. And all the people who live in that second set of cities, the cities that are visited after vandalism, in their mind, the palace is ugly, dingy, unattractive. It's dirty. It's a dirty palace. Is the palace really dirty? Absolutely not. Nothing changed. No one attacked the palace. The palace is in beautiful, pristine condition. But if all you know about the palace is a picture upon which people threw mud, you'll think that the palace itself is dirty. That's not a chisar in the palace. That's a chisar in the picture that you were shown. The Nesiva says, why is he talking about this in Hakadama to Shir HaShirim? says Shir HaShirim is love poetry. Shir HaShirim is a story of a boy and girl madly in love with each other and trying to find each other, keep getting separated. Very, very passionate. And it's a mashal for our relationship, either relationship between Klal Yisrael HaKadosh Baruch Hu, mashal relationship between an individual Jew and HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That second approach is the approach of both the Rambam and the Malbim in different places. But either way, it's a description. It's a symbolic description of human love for HaKadosh Baruch Hu and divine love for us. Relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And it even says, "V'im Tomar, really, the best you could do to describe the ideal, the passion between HaKadosh Baruch Hu and a Jew is that." The Siva says, if you'll ask me, isn't that demeaning? You're lowering it? The best thing, couldn't you think of something nicer, more polite than the love between a man and a woman to describe spiritual accomplishment? The Siva says, if that's your kasha, here's your problem. If you think that that's a kasha, that's because you've only seen pictures of the palace with mud thrown on it. So you think that the palace is dirty. Because, yeah, plenty of people treat a relationship with your husband and wife, or more generally, relationships between men and women, many people see them as something dirty, and many people implement them as, execute them as something dirty and debased. But that doesn't mean that the thing itself is dirty at all. It could be done incredibly poorly, or it could be done incredibly well. HaKadosh Baruch Hu gives us a path to do this incredibly well. And that's why it has great spiritual potential. It could be done Agavi Atzmacha. In a certain sense, it's the greatest B'halachta B'dracha. We talk about trying to imitate the divine model. The second half of the Rav Halachic Man, the first half of the Rav Halachic Man, loosely speaking, is how to be a good Lathak, and I'm obviously flattening, you know, 80-100 pages of profundity, but in a nutshell, it's how to be in the most excellent Lathak possible, in the most ideal positive sense. The second half of Halachic Man is looking at creativity as one of the highest forms of Halachta B'Dracha. And if one of the most fundamental things to say about Rabbeinu Shlomo is he is the ultimate creator. He created the universe. So if we in our own small human way, we can be creative in learning. We can be creative in music. We can be creative in different for a person to be creative, to have a new idea, to be an entrepreneur, to put together a new organization, to solve a problem in a fresh way. Those are, the Rabbeinu Shlomo writes, exceptionally strong types of Halachta B'Dracha. In a certain sense, the greatest creativity that's most like divine creativity is creating another human being. Doesn't that indicate that this is an incredible spiritual potential here? It can be used incredibly well or incredibly poorly. So that's part of the Machlokas, the Ramban, and the Rambam. And sort of the mainstream approach, this is not the only Ish Machlokas Rambam Ramban where the vast majority of Rishonim are on board with the Ramban. It might relate as well to the machlokas about Tchias HaMesim and Olam Haba, whether they're the same or not. The Rambam sees Olam Haba as being apart from Tchias HaMesim. The Rambam thinks Olam Haba is purely spiritual. There's no place for bodies in the ultimate existence. And the Ramban and Rabbi Shlomo say, no, Tchias HaMesim and Olam Haba is the same thing. That is Olam Haba. Our bodies and souls will come back together, and then we'll live forever as perfected human beings. Because we are body and soul combined. That's not a negative, that's not a concession, that's not a vidyevik, that we have bodies. That's the way Rosh Hashanah wants to be a fusion of physical and spiritual. It's l'chor a different expression of the same fundamental focus. And both issues, the predominant view definitely is like the Ramban. A lot more to think about, but again, that's a world of machshava from one word in the Torah. The word kodesh. Shekel HaKodesh. What does that mean, Shekel HaKodesh? The Ramban, that opens up a whole world. That single word.